Recently, the Sporkful community and the entire food world was saddened to hear of the passing of Carol Grimaldi. She was the wife of Patsy Grimaldi, the New York pizza legend. She passed away at the age of 76. She'd been known to be battling cancer. And she was so much more than the woman behind the man. She was a co-founder with Patsy of the pizzerias that they owned. And the two of them together were just New York pizza legends. About a year ago, I was lucky enough to get to sit down with Mr. and Mrs. Grimaldi together, talk to them about making pizza, about their history with each other and with pizza. And Mrs. Grimaldi's personality and passion for pizza really, really came through in the interview. And I wanted to replay it this week as a tribute to her. And we'll get more into the history of Mr. and Mrs. Grimaldi and their work in this episode as well. So with the tip of the cap to Carol Grimaldi, here's this week's episode of The Sporkful.
This is The Sporkful.
I'm standing outside 19 Old Fulton Street in Brooklyn, and I want to start this show by explaining to you exactly who Patsy Grimaldi is and why I'm so excited to have him on The Sporkful today. And this is a story that involves history and passion and revenge and, most importantly, pizza. Now, in 1905, Gennaro Lombardi applied to New York City for the first license to make and sell pizza in America. So, like, if you're tracing the spread of pizza throughout this country, this is Pizza Zero, okay, Lombardi's. And many of the legendary pizza places that opened in the 20th century were run by guys who started at Lombardi's and then went out on their own. One guy like that was Patsy Grimaldi's uncle, who left Lombardi's and opened his own place, and Patsy went to work there when he was 13 years old. That was in 1941. Now, fast forward to 1990, and Patsy Grimaldi opens Grimaldi's right here at 19 Old Fulton Street in Brooklyn. And it's a huge success. But 8 years later, Patsy's in his 60s. He's ready to slow down. So he sells Grimaldi's to a regular customer who's also an investor. Patsy stays on as consultant, but after a while, they have a falling out. Patsy thinks the new guy isn't making the pizza right, and he thinks Patsy's getting in the way of the operation. So Patsy Grimaldi is no longer welcome in the famous pizzeria that bears his name. And the investor goes on to open dozens of Grimaldi's locations in Vegas and Palm Beach. And the pizza's still good, but it's not the same. Now, here's where it gets really exciting. The investor has trouble with the landlord at 19 Old Fulton and decides to move next door. And who swoops in to open up shop? Patsy Grimaldi. He comes out of retirement at age 81 and opens Giuliana's, named after his mother, right next door to his arch rival, right next door to the pizzeria that bears his name. And the pizza is amazing. Quite a story. So today I'm going to talk to him and his wife, Carol, who's been a huge part of this too. And I know the revenge story is juicy, but I'm not really going to get into that. I think the fact that he came out of retirement and opened this place in this spot, it really tells you all you need to know about that. I want to focus on the pizza. Because Patsy Grimaldi, the man I'm about to interview, is most likely the last guy in America making pizza today who trained under someone who trained under Lombardi. Pizza Zero, from 1905. So today on The Sporkful, Patsy and Carol Grimaldi. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. Before we get to my interview with Patsy Grimaldi, I do want to give credit where credit is due. A lot of that history that I just gave you about Patsy and about pizza in New York came from a piece that was in New York Magazine a while back. Also featured on their Grub Street blog. It was written by Jane Black, and I will link to that piece on sporkful.com. But let's go ahead and get into today's topic for mastication and rumination, which is Patsy and Carol Grimaldi, The Sporkful Interview. Let me take you now directly to Giuliana's, where I sat down recently with Mr. and Mrs. Grimaldi. Mr. Grimaldi, when you see a pie coming out of the oven, describe to me what does your perfect pie look like?
Oh, well, it has to be cooked properly and seasoned properly.
When you say cooked properly, what do you think are some of the mistakes that younger, less experienced pizza chefs make?
Not work the oven properly, like put it on a hot spot where it could burn very easily. They have to be very knowledgeable about working a coal oven.
And am I right? Is this the original oven? So I'm curious, Mrs. Grimaldi, when you guys came back to this location and you fired up that oven for the first time, that must have been an exciting moment.
It was exciting after we refurbished it. It wasn't that exciting when we walked in. It had little guys with little eyes looking out at us, and it was quite a bad shape. It needed refurbishing. But the first time we fired it up, it was exciting.
And am I right? I would guess that an old coal oven could be temperamental. It sort of, it has its own personality. What's the personality of this oven?
Well, you have to understand how it's built. It has a layer of sand underneath the firestone, and it's very possible that there's more sand in one area than another, not because it was made that way, but as the sand settled, so that the sand retains the heat. And in some areas, it's a little bit less heat, so the person who's handling the oven has to know the hot spots, the cold spots. And according to Patsy, he knows exactly when the oven, by the look of the coal, where to place the pizza. On the left side if the oven is too hot, closer to the oven to the coal if it's too cold.
So this is not something where you can just sort of write down the instructions and walk away and tell someone to do it. There's a lot more.
No, you have to be there. You have to do it. If someone just walked in off the street and wants to learn how to make pizza, it would be impossible. They have to stay there the way I did when I was a youngster and work it 10 hours a day for months.
Let's talk a little bit about the three most basic ingredients of pizza. You got your cheese, your sauce, and your crust. Is there one ingredient that you think is the most important one to get right?
Well, the tomatoes is number one. If you don't have good tomatoes, you can forget about it.
The crust, too, is of most. And you can't have the good tomatoes without a great crust. It's together. I think it's just all together, the cheese, the tomato, and the crust. If one is not right, the other won't be right.
One of the things that I think is interesting about this style of pizza, which I think would be a little foreign to folks in other parts of the country, you know, where they're accustomed to sort of your typical pizzeria where it's a whole thick layer of sauce and a whole thick layer of cheese, and you don't see any of the crust except on the edges. The way you do it, you got spots of cheese, spots with no cheese, spots with sauce, spots with no sauce. What is it about that approach? Why do you like that variation?
Well, most, 99% of your pizzerias, they grade their mozzarella.
It's a grated processed cheese.
And they just pour it all over the pizza. Where I serve it, which I slice my mozzarella up, and I don't cover the whole pizza with mozzarella, or else you'll be having a mouthful of mozzarella and no taste of the tomatoes and the dough.
You want a little bit of everything. You want to be able to taste everything and not have it all be one big taste.
Mr. Grimaldi, you talked about, you know, spending all those years as you did as a young man learning how to work the coal oven. Were there days that you were working it when you were young and you were feeling like, man, like, did you get frustrated? Were there days you feel like this wasn't working right for you?
No, I enjoyed every bit of it, except when the weather was 99 degrees and I'm working by a coal oven without an air conditioner, without a fan. That's how it was in the days I was growing up. And we did have one little fan in the corner of the store, and every time I would put it on, my aunt was the owner of the store. She would tell me, oh, in Italian, you don't know pay the bills. You have to turn the fan off. And I had to turn the fan off until she walked away, then I would turn it back on again. But even that little fan didn't make a difference. It was like 130 degrees. I'm 12 hours of work doing that, you know, it could weigh it down. At night, I didn't have the energy to walk from the subway to my house. That's how exhausted I was from the heat.
He also told me that he used to instead of going home, because they didn't have air conditioning at home either, he'd go to a movie theater and sleep.
Yeah. So I guess it's good to do it the old-fashioned way in a lot of respects, but sometimes there is such thing as progress, right? Central air, not so bad, right? How long have you guys been married?
45 years.
Wow. So, Mr. Grimaldi, is there anything that Mrs. Grimaldi has taught you about pizza?
Yeah, she has a great taste for tomatoes and cooking.
We created a few of the new pizzas.
Which ones?
The number two, which is cherry tomatoes, buffalo mozzarella, garlic. Forgot what else I put in there. And then I have the pancetta pizza with the scaramuzza and the homemade mozzarella and truffle oil.
Wow.
Really good. I lie awake some nights thinking, creating, and then trying, and sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, she told me about that recipe. I said, no way. I said, pancetta and scaramuzza on a pizza? No.
Scallions.
And scallions. I said, come on, now you're getting ridiculous. But I went to taste the pancetta, and I flipped over it. Scallions and everything else was... she knows what she's talking about, you know.
When you enjoy eating, you enjoy creating in the kitchen. So I think about it a lot. It's a large part of our lives. We're not doing our clams, pineapple and ham.
Eggs.
And hot dogs. Because in Italy, I understand hot dogs and eggs are really bigger.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
Just with the margarita, nothing else. But slowly, his taste buds, because we recreate. You know, the products that are available to us now, 20 years later after we started, are so much. Even our spices we get from a special place. We don't walk into a grocery store and buy a box of oregano. It's grown specially for us in Vermont. So all these things are available now that were not available prior.
So I want to hear more about, you know, I guess in some ways things change, in some ways, you know, they remain the same. You know, you're a part of this, you both of you are part of this historic legacy, and you're so important in the history of pizza, and you get talked about, it gets talked about all the time. I'm curious, when someone comes in here now, and they eat a pizza now, how closely does that resemble the pie that I would have gotten 50 years ago?
No, there's no comparison. Years ago was just a margarita pizza, and a marinara pizza. That was it. Those were the only two pizzas they made.
When I see my old customers who do come back, most of them have coming back slowly. They all say they never thought it could be better than it was before, but they all say it's better now. That's because some of the products are available to us now that weren't then, so it enhances it a little bit. But always the oven. The good cheese, the good tomatoes, and the good crust. No matter what you put on it, that's still the best.
Tell me about your approach to eating pizza. Do you go fork and knife? Do you like to fold it? How do you do it?
I'm a folder. the most you can get in your mouth at one time.
I start with a fork and knife and then work my way to folding.
Right, because it's usually...
I eat it when it's hot.
Yeah. I do too. I do the same. I do the same exact thing. I start off with a fork and knife, and as soon as it's so easy to handle, I shove it in my mouth.
And I'm curious, you guys both said that you, when you're eating a slice of pizza, you start off cutting it, and then when it cools a bit and it's a little firmer, you go to folding. Have you ever tried folding it inside out? So that the cheese is on the outside and it's pressed against your tongue.
No, that couldn't be done.
I would burn.
No, if it's cooled down just enough, that way the cheese and the sauce go right onto your tongue and you taste it more. What do you think?
All the ingredients will fall off if you fold the opposite way.
Even with a standard margarita?
Yeah. Everything will...
It's not glued. It's a movable object, so they're going to fall off.
Interesting, because I have to say, I've done it. I've done it before. You got to be a little careful. You're right, but it can be done. I want you guys to try that. Maybe that could be the next... Maybe Mrs. Grimaldi, maybe you could add that to the menu, inside-out pizza. What do you think?
We'll give it a thought.
I have a feeling I might not make it.
No, I don't think so. Just like when people want tomato sauce in their calzone. I mean, like... hello. You know, it's like, then you open it up, it's like tomato soup. It's like really bad.
I'm sure that you sometimes see people come in here and they eat the pizza and they leave the end crust. They don't eat that end part. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm happy to do that. I saved the crust for my birds. I feed hundreds of birds every day in my yard.
I also recommend that it's good in the morning with eggs. And a lot of people take it home for that reason.
Yeah. Interesting. What do you think is the best way to reheat leftover pizza?
Teflon frying pan made hot, and place the pizza in no oil, nothing. Just place the pizza on it just for a second. I'd say about a minute. If it doesn't dry it out, doesn't change the product at all. Putting it in the oven sometimes makes it soggy or too crispy, but that works.
Especially a microwave.
Oh, horrible. Makes it like a mush.
No, those things are a disaster. Matt, the co-owner of Giuliani's, just sat down next to us. Matt, I don't mean to spill the beans here, but they were just talking about your use of the microwave. Is it true that you sometimes use a microwave to reheat leftover pizza?
Yes, I only recently found out that that's not an ideal way.
And you guys let this guy in here?
It's all right, he knows plenty about pizza.
And I know it says here on the sign already that Pat's favorite pie is the Skarmutz, which is...
a smoked sheep cheese, similar to smoked mozzarella, but a little bit less powerful.
What's your favorite?
I like the number two with the buffalo mozzarella and little cherry tomatoes, garlic.
What do you think are some of the common mistakes people make when ordering pizzas?
They order pizza?
Yeah, I'm sure once in a while there must be an order that comes into your kitchen and you say, oh, geez, this guy, not the best order here.
Okay, I have had people that came in and wanted pineapple on their pizza, broccoli, and, you know, ridiculous things.
How many toppings is too many toppings?
Too many toppings is a pizza with everything. Like, people order a pizza with pepperoni, sausage, anchovies. To me, that, you know, too much. It makes the pizza soggy, number one. And number two, it's just not the right way to do things.
How did you guys meet?
I had a friend who was a musician and had a band, and Pat was working at this restaurant where they were playing, and that's where we met.
So that would have been the 60s?
Yeah, late 60s.
But you guys were together for a long time before you opened this restaurant, the first time around, before you opened it in 1990.
Yes. The only reason we just could not find a location that was suitable for us, Pat was looking for years. And things always came up, you know, the children, the grand stuff like that. But when he came to this location, he found it. He said every Italian in New York, in Brooklyn, drives past this location because they cut off from the BQE down Furman Street. He's a great location. So we took a look at it, and it was a hole in the floor. There was nothing here. It was an old hardware store. And the rent was very reasonable. And we did it. We just did it. We sold everything we owned, all our savings, and the last $20,000 we had to borrow. But we made it. And fortunately, when we first opened in June 1990, a young lady from New York Magazine, Robin Ricefield, who was one of the food critics, but then she was an intern, she asked if she could do a little article about us. She did a half a page, and that was where it took off for us. Because nobody walked down here. This was really desolate down here.
Right now, it's a tourist destination.
It's everybody destination. Dumbo has grown incredibly. There's like 4,000 residents, 12,000 people working here. It's incredible.
Is there a question that nobody ever asked Mr. Grimaldi that you feel like they should ask? I'm asking you.
I know what you're asking. I have to stop and think about that one. It doesn't come off the head.
Right. Like, what's something that we should know that we don't know?
People want to know what he did during the 10 years that we were retired. He became a cat rescuer and rescued I don't know, about hundreds of cats, found homes for them, had them fixed. And because of that, I now have 11 cats in my house, 7 cats in my backyard, 5 cats down the block that he takes care of. But it was very important for him. And I spent my 10 years, if anybody's interested, we have a developmentally disabled son and lives in a group home, and I'm the president of the board, so that I've kept myself very active, fundraising, etc. So we were very busy. But this is different kind of busy for us. So we're involving both all our lives together now, and it's good. It's keeping us going.
And Mr. Grimaldi, do the cats like your pizza?
No, kind of. The birds do.
What's your favorite thing to eat besides pizza?
Oh, what else? Pasta. Pizza, pasta.
And what's your favorite thing to cook besides pizza?
Besides pizza, soup. I'm a soup Nazi.
The original soup Nazi.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Grimaldi, thanks so much. Good luck. Congratulations. Congratulations, first of all, on the successful opening, and continued good luck here at Giuliana's. Before signing off today, I thought let's take a few minutes and check in with you, the loyal listeners of The Sporkful, the eaters, the members of the Eatscape. Let's open up the old email mailbag. Remember, you too can email me at dan@sporkful.com. Here's one from Eater Andy in Reston, Virginia. He writes, "Hi, Dan. First of all, I love the podcast. I'll admit it feels odd to write, but you have a way of bringing out strong opinions I never knew I held, and thus I am compelled to comment." Well, first of all, thank you, Andy. That is one of my favorite reactions that I get to The Sporkful. People don't realize they care so much about these things until they realize they care so much about these things. So welcome. You are safe here. Now, Andy writes, in response to the last podcast, which discussed watermelon in great detail, and I talked about how watermelon wedges, yes, they're pretty easy to pick up by the rind, but I feel like when you bite into them, they get all over your face. He says, "At a recent family get-together, I noticed my mother-in-law served watermelon in wedge form, but rather than leaving the large wedge that I complained of, she trimmed each wedge into several smaller wedges about 2 inches wide at the base, small enough for even a child to handle one-handed, and small enough that a child's mouth could easily consume it without any unfortunate juice face incidents. Also, it allowed the watermelon to be arranged so that each piece stood vertically with the rind on the table, which allowed for an easily takeable finger food that could be placed on any surface." Well, that's a good tip, Andy. I like that, and I'm going to try that out. Cut your wedges much more narrowly, and you won't mess your face. Next email comes from Eater Jack Bigley in Seattle. This is in response to the burrito show with Matthew Iglesias we did a little while back. He says, "Hey, Dan, next time you go to Chipotle, order a quesadilla burrito. It's a secret menu item where they take a quesadilla, cook it, and then open it up, and then make your burrito with that tortilla. It's delicious and melts the cheese and gives the tortilla a slight crunch." Well, I looked into this. It turns out that Chipotle will not confirm the existence of what the internet generally refers to as the quesarito, but it's tough to deny when you see all the evidence on the web that this thing exists. There's even a story of a guy going to his local Chipotle. He goes up to the counter. He doesn't know if they're even going to know what he's talking about. He says, "I want a quesarito." And the woman says, "I don't know what you're talking about. We don't have that." And he feels stupid. And then she says, "But if we did serve something like that, it wouldn't be between noon and one." Wink, wink. So, inside tip from Eater Jack in Seattle, go to Chipotle and check out the quesarito. Finally, I just need to play a voicemail that we got on the old voicemail line here. I just got a big kick out of this one. Here it is.
"Hi, my name is Joe, and I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I have a nickname, and they call me Blue Cheese. I've loved blue cheese since I was 14, and I've got it tattooed on me, and I just enjoy different varieties of blue cheese. Thank you very much, man."
I love that was the entire point of the voicemail, was just that so that I would know that. So, blue cheese in Brooklyn with a tattoo of blue cheese. I mean, that is not, you know, there are a lot of tats out there. He might be the only guy with a blue cheese tattoo in the world. I'm going to go ahead and wager that is a decent possibility. So, for that commitment to blue cheese, I want to tip my cap to you, blue cheese. And friends, don't forget that you too can give me a ring if you have something you want to discuss, something you want to say, a rant, If you disagree with something I said on the podcast, if you have a debate you want me to settle, I want to hear from you. 908-9-SPORK-9 is the number. Again, 908-9-SPORK-9. Thank you so much for listening. As always, my fellow eaters, remember to follow The Sporkful on Twitter at The Sporkful. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Sporkful. And until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.